using the voice on me, he thought. He stopped at her gesture, standing beside her knees. See this? She asked. From the folds of her gown, she lifted a green metal cube about 15 centimeters on a side. She turned it, and Paul saw that one side was open, black and oddly frightening. No light penetrated that open blackness.
Put your right hand in the box, she said.
Fear shot through Paul. He started to back away, but the old woman said,
Is this how you obey your mother?
He looked up into bird-bright eyes. Slowly, feeling the compulsions and unable to inhibit them, Paul put his hand into the box. He felt first a sense of cold as the blackness closed around his hand, then slick metal against his fingers, and a prickling as though his hand were asleep. A predatory look filled the old woman's features. She lifted her right hand away from the box and poised the hand close to the side of Paul's neck. He saw a glint of metal there and started to turn toward it.
Stop!
She snapped.
Using the voice again.
He swung his attention back to her face.
I hold at your neck the Gam Jabbar, she said. The Gam Jabbar, the high-handed enemy. It's a needle with a drop of poison on its tip. Uh-uh! Don't pull away, or you'll feel that poison.
Paul tried to swallow in a dry throat. He could not take his attention from the seamed old face, the glistening eyes, the pale gums around silvery metal teeth that flashed as she spoke.
A duke's son must know about poisons, she said. It's the way of our times, eh? Musky, to be poisoned in your drink. Almus, to be poisoned in your food. The quick ones and the slow ones and the ones in between. Here's a new one for you, the Gam Jabbar. It kills only animals.
Pride overcame Paul's fear.
You dare suggest a duke's son is an animal? He demanded.
Let us say I suggest you may be human, she said. Steady. I warn you not to try jerking away. I am old, but my hand can drive this needle into your neck before you escape me.
Who are you? He whispered. How did you trick my mother into leaving me alone with you? Are you from the Harkonnens?
The Harkonnens? Bless us, no. Now be silent.
A dry finger touched his neck, and he stilled the involuntary urge to leap away.
Good, she said. You passed the first test. Now, here's the way of the rest of it. If you withdraw your hand from the box, you die. This is the only rule. Keep your hand in the box and live. Withdraw it and die.
Paul took a deep breath to still his trembling.
If I call out, there'll be servants on you in seconds, and you'll die.
Servants will not pass your mother, who stands guard outside that door. Depend on it. Your mother survived this test. Now it's your turn. Be honored. We seldom administer this to men, children.
Curiosity reduced Paul's fear to a manageable level. He heard truth in the old woman's voice, no denying it. If his mother stood guard out there, if this were truly a test, and whatever it was, he knew himself caught in it, trapped by that hand at his neck, the Gam Jabbar. He recalled the response from the litany against fear, as his mother had taught him out of the Bene Gesserit rite.
I must not fear. Fear is the mind-killer. Fear is the little death that brings total obliteration. I will face my fear. I will permit it to pass over me and through me. And when it has gone past, I will turn the inner eye to see its path. Where the fear has gone, there will be nothing. Only I will remain.
He felt calmness return, said,
Get on with it, old woman.
Old woman, she snapped. You've courage, and that can't be denied. Well, we shall see, Sirrah.
She bent close, lowered her voice almost to a whisper.
You will feel pain in this hand within the box. Pain, but withdraw the hand, and I'll touch your neck with my Gam Jabbar. The death so swift, it's like the fall of the headsman's axe. Withdraw your hand, and the Gam Jabbar takes you. Understand?
What's in the box?
Pain.
He felt increased tingling in his hand, pressed his lips tightly together.
How could this be a test? He wondered.
The tingling became an itch. The old woman said,
You've heard of animals chewing off a leg to escape a trap? There's an animal kind of trick. A human would remain in the trap, endure the pain, feigning death that he might kill the trapper, and remove a threat to his kind.
The itch became the faintest burning.
Why are you doing this? He demanded. To determine if you're human. Be silent.
Paul clenched his left hand into a fist as the burning sensation increased in the other hand. It mounted slowly, heat upon heat upon heat upon heat. He felt the fingernails of his free hand biting the palm. He tried to flex the fingers of the burning hand, but couldn't move them.
It burns, he whispered. Silence!
Pain throbbed up his arm. Sweat stood out on his forehead. Every fiber cried out to withdraw the hand from that burning pit. But the Gamjabar... Without turning his head, he tried to move his eyes to see that terrible needle poised beside his neck. He sensed that he was breathing in gasps, tried to slow his breaths, and couldn't. Pain! His world emptied of everything except that hand immersed in agony, the ancient face inches away staring at him. His lips were so dry he had difficulty separating them.
The burning! The burning!
He thought he could feel skin curling black on that agonized hand, the flesh crisping and dropping away until only charred bones remained. It stopped. As though a switch had been turned off, the pain stopped. Paul felt his right arm trembling, felt sweat bathing his body.
Enough, the old woman muttered. Kul Wahad, no woman child ever withstood that much. I must have wanted you to fail.
She leaned back, withdrawing the Gamjabar from the side of his neck.
Take your hand from the box, young human, and look at it.
He fought down an aching shiver, stared at the lightless void where his hand seemed to remain of its own volition. Memory of pain inhibited every movement. Reason told him he would withdraw a blackened stump from that box.
Do it,
she snapped. He jerked his hand from the box, stared at it, astonished. Not a mark. No sign of agony on the flesh. He held up his hand, turned it, flexed the fingers.
Pain by nerve induction, she said. Can't go around maiming potential humans. There are those who'd give a pretty for the secret of this box, though.
She slipped it into the folds of her gown.
But the pain, he said. Pain, she sniffed. A human can override any nerve in the body.
Paul felt his left hand aching, uncurled the clenched fingers, looked at four bloody marks where fingernails had bitten his palm. He dropped the hand to his side, looked at the old woman.
You did that to my mother once? Ever sift sand through a screen? She asked.
The tangential slash of her question shocked his mind into a higher awareness.
Sand through a screen.
He nodded.
We Bene Gesserit sift people to find the humans.
He lifted his right hand, willing the memory of the pain.
And that's all there is to it? Pain? I observed you in pain, lad. Pain's merely the axis of the test. Your mother's told you about our ways of observing. I see the signs of her teaching in you. Our test is crisis and observation.
He heard the confirmation in her voice, said,
It's truth.
She stared at him.
He senses truth. Could he be the one? Could he truly be the one?
She extinguished the excitement, reminding herself,
Hope clouds observation. You know when people believe what they say, she said.
I know it.
The harmonics of ability confirmed by repeated tests were in his voice. She heard them, said,
Perhaps you are the Kwisatz Haderach. Sit down, little brother, here at my feet.
I prefer to stand.
Your mother sat at my feet once.
I'm not my mother.
You hate us a little, eh?
She looked toward the door, called out,
Jessica!
The door flew open, and Jessica stood there staring hard-eyed into the room. Hardness melted from her as she saw Paul. She managed a faint smile.
Jessica, have you ever stopped hating me?
The old woman asked.
I both love and hate you, Jessica said. The hate, that's from pains I must never forget. The love, that's...
Just the basic fact,
the old woman said, but her voice was gentle.
You may come in now, but remain silent. Close that door and mind it that no one interrupts us.
Jessica stepped into the room, closed the door, and stood with her back to it.
My son lives, she thought. My son lives and is human. I knew he was, but he lives. Now I can go on living.
The door felt hard and real against her back. Everything in the room was immediate and pressing against her senses.
My son lives.
Paul looked at his mother.
She told the truth.
He wanted to get away alone and think this experience through, but knew he could not leave until he was dismissed. The old woman had gained a power over him. They spoke truth. His mother had undergone this test. There must be terrible purpose in it. The pain and fear had been terrible. He understood terrible purposes. They drove against all odds. They were their own necessity. Paul felt that he had been infected with terrible purpose. He did not know yet what the terrible purpose was.
"Some day, lad," the old woman said, "you too may have to stand outside a door like that. It takes a measure of doing."
Paul looked down at the hand that had known pain, then up to the Reverend Mother. The sound of her voice had contained a difference then from any other voice in his experience. The words were outlined in brilliance. There was an edge to them. He felt that any question he might ask her would bring an answer that could lift him out of his flesh world into something greater.
"Why do you test for humans?" he asked.
"To set you free."
"Free?"
"Once men turned their thinking over to machines in the hope that this would set them free, but that only permitted other men with machines to enslave them."
"Thou shalt not make a machine in the likeness of a man's mind," Paul quoted.
"Right out of the Butlerian Jihad and the Orange Catholic Bible," she said. "But what the O.C. Bible should have said is, thou shalt not make a machine to counterfeit a human mind. Have you studied the Mentat in your service?"
"I've studied with Thufir Hawat."
"The Great Revolt took away a crutch," she said. "It forced human minds to develop. Schools were started to train human talents."
"Bene Gesserit schools?"
She nodded.
"We have two chief survivors of those ancient schools, the Bene Gesserit and the Spacing Guild. The Guild, so we think, emphasizes almost pure mathematics. Bene Gesserit performs another function."
"Politics," he said.
"Cool wahad,"
the old woman said. She sent a hard glance at Jessica.
"I've not told him, Your Reverence," Jessica said.
The Reverend Mother returned her attention to Paul.
"You did that on remarkably few clues," she said. "Politics, indeed. The original Bene Gesserit school was directed by those who saw the need of a thread of continuity in human affairs. They saw there could be no such continuity without separating human stock from animal stock for breeding purposes."
The old woman's words abruptly lost their special sharpness for Paul. He felt an offense against what his mother called his instinct for rightness. It wasn't that Reverend Mother lied to him. She obviously believed what she said. It was something deeper, something tied to his terrible purpose. He said,
"But my mother tells me many Bene Gesserit of the schools don't know their ancestry."
"The genetic lines are always in our records," she said. "Your mother knows that either she's of Bene Gesserit descent, or her stock was acceptable in itself."
"Then why couldn't she know who her parents are?"
"Some do, many don't. We might, for example, have wanted to breed her to a close relative, to set up a dominant in some genetic trait. We have many reasons."
Again, Paul felt the offense against rightness. He said,
"You take a lot on yourselves."
The Reverend Mother stared at him, wondering,
"Did I hear criticism in his voice?" "We carry a heavy burden," she said.
Paul felt himself coming more and more out of the shock of the test. He leveled a measuring stare at her, said,
"You say maybe I'm the Kwisatz Haderach. What's that, a human Gamjabar?"
"Paul," Jessica said,
"you mustn't take that tone with 'I'll handle this, Jessica,'" the old woman said. "Now, lad, do you know about the truth-sayer drug?"
"You take it to improve your ability to detect falsehood," he said. "My mother's told me."
"Have you ever seen truth trance?"
He shook his head.
"No."
"The drug's dangerous," she said, "but it gives insight.